This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Good morning. The House Health and Human Services Committee will now come to order. This is a great time to take the opportunity to check your phones, make sure there's no ringer on. We'd appreciate that. And with that, will the Secretary call the roll?
Representatives Campbell.
Here.
Consett.
Here.
Deutsch.
Here.
DeSanto.
Here.
Greenfield.
Here.
Haugard.
Here.
Holmes.
Here.
McCleary.
Here.
Sly.
Here.
Soley.
Here.
Woman.
Here.
Heineman.
Here.
Munsterman.
Here.
We have a quorum.
We do. Thank you very much. You have the minutes from the last meeting. I would entertain a motion for approval.
Moved
by Representative Heineman, seconded by Representative Consett. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? Minutes are passed. We have two pages with us today. I would ask if you would come to the mic, turn it on, tell us your name, where you're from, and what your vision is for your life. That one would work just great.
My name is George Lee Quayle. I'm a senior at Dual High School in Clear Lake, and next year I'll be going to SDSU for hospitality management with an event and facility administration minor to become an event planner.
Very good.
And my name is Isabella Haig. I'm from Rapid City, and I'm a senior at Stevens High School, and I plan on going to USD for pre-law.
Very good. It's great to have you with. And for those proponents, opponents that may have handouts or information that they'd like to get to the committee when you give testimony, feel free to hand it off to the pages, and they will distribute that without any problems. And likewise, if you're here to testify on a bill, make sure that you're here to testify on behalf of an organization. You have a badge. And if you're here as an individual, you're in good shape. But let's make sure we get signed in as well. And so welcome to our internet listeners. We're going to go ahead and get started with our hearing, and I will turn over the meeting to our very capable vice chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We will open testimony for House Bill 1069, revise certain provisions related to genetic counselor licensure. Are there any proponents? Representative Munsterman.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Scott Munsterman, representing District 7. And it's my pleasure and opportunity to bring before you House Bill 1069.
Excuse me, is your light on? There.
Boy, it wasn't green. How about that?
Thank you.
The light was on, but it was red. So, my name is Scott Munsterman, Representative District 7. Welcome to the, not welcome, but thank you for welcoming me. Okay, let's just get started. I'm here to talk about House Bill 1069, which essentially does two things. Number one, it helps clean up a little bit of a change that occurred in the accrediting portion, training portion of genetic counselors. And we've got some folks that will speak to that and why that's so important. And by the way, these two changes that we're going to talk about today came from an advisory board that actually serves under the Board of Medical Examiners. The second piece, which really is a very important piece, has to do with allowing genetic counselors to actually do the order of the test. And so I thought the best way to describe this would be just to relay for you a personal story. Many of you know my wife has breast cancer, and we found that out about 7 years ago. And one of the steps that we went through as we went through that process was that we were referred by the oncologist to the genetic counselor. Now, the oncologist told us, look, I don't know if this test is in order or not in order, but I'm going to refer you to somebody that actually understands this way better than I do. And so as patients, we walked through that process. We went to the genetic counselor, and lo and behold, after all the due diligence and the assessment process, decided that the test really wasn't necessary. Now, that saved me personally about $3,000 or $4,000, not that I wasn't willing to spend that if we needed it, but that genetic counselor actually was the person that understood if we really needed the test or not. And what this bill does is actually allows for that process to continue. It has come out as a best practice. maybe not with all providers, but at least it did for us with our oncologists, where that individual that has a lot of knowledge and expertise did not have a lot of knowledge and expertise about if that particular test was, you know, valid for us to carry through or not. And essentially, that's what this bill does, is it allows that genetic counselor to get that referral, and then for them to go through their due diligence and their training and all that they know to be able to say, you know what, this test should be run, or no, this test should not be run. And so with that, I'm going to stand by for any questions. We have some other folks that would love to address the committee on this bill. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Munsterman, are there further proponents?
Good morning. My name is Quinn Stein. I'm from Sioux Falls and representing Augustana University today. I am a genetic counselor, and I was fortunate to be here in 2009 when the first bill went through the process. And I wish to speak today in support of House Bill 1069, which makes two important revisions related to genetic counseling licensure. Just a little bit about the cleanup language. In 2009, the accrediting body for genetic counseling programs was known as the ABGC. The ABGC, American Board of Genetic Counselors, has now split into two. The ABGC maintains certification and maintenance of that certification. The ACGC accredits actual graduate programs. I'm proud to say that Augustana University went through a very rigorous accreditation process over the last year and a half, and just before the new year, we received word that we are the 32nd accredited program in the United States, so we're very proud of that. And so in order for our graduates, our class will start in the fall. In 2018, we'd have our first graduating class, and they will graduate from an ACGC accredited program. So we need them to be able to get licenses in South Dakota, and this language helps with that. Similarly, the ABMG, which was the American Board of Medical Genetics, added genomics to the end of their name, and so they are now the ABMGG, and so that's kind of the second acronym. So that's the first portion. Secondly, HB 1069 adds genetic counselor to the list of providers who can order genetic testing, along with physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and midwives. Genetic counseling is still subject to referral from a healthcare provider, and genetic testing is only ordered upon referral from one of those referring providers. The revision really is intended to benefit the patients and physicians and healthcare providers. There's no direct benefit to genetic counselors themselves. Currently, when a physician or other healthcare provider refers to a genetic counselor, they're really asking us to do a risk assessment, to do education of the patient, to determine medical necessity, and to really be their partner in the process and determine if a genetic test is necessary. In some cases, the answer is no. As you've heard testimony already, we do not recommend a test. In other cases, we do recommend that genetic testing be done or considered. What goes into that is we have to know, is the test accurate? What's the sensitivity? Is it 30% sensitive or accurate? Is it 99%, 100%? So that's important. The other thing is, if it's a test for breast cancer, which is the right gene? Should we test for BRCA1 and 2? Should we look for CDH1? Should we look for P10 because of other things in the family history? Or if we already know a family has one specific mutation and one specific gene, we can really focus in on exactly what to do. Knowing which gene or even which spot in that gene can be a difference between a couple hundred or several thousand dollars for the test. And so really we're helping the physician and the patient make the best decision. But at the end of that, we still have to kind of coach the referring provider. This is exactly what you need to do. This is how to do it. And what we hear from physicians is, can't you just do it? You know, I want the result back and you to tell me what it means and help me to manage the patient. But really they're asking us for that too. And so as it currently stands, we work around it. We educate physicians. It works, but it does add complexity and the chances for error, especially if the wrong test is ordered or if we order a full genetic test versus kind of that one piece that we need. I want to be clear that nothing in the language changes anything in regards to how genetic testing or counseling does or does not get paid for. Nothing in this statute, the 2009 version or this, requires genetic testing be paid for in any form. What we really do with patients and their physicians, though, is kind of help them determine, do they meet established medical necessity criteria? Would this make a difference? And then really kind of help work with the patient to determine how much will this test cost you or your insurance company, and is it beneficial to you? I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. This ends my my testimony on HB 1069. I'll wait for questions until the time comes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Yes. Are there any further proponents?
Thank you.
Proceed.
Deborah Owen from South Dakota Healthcare Associations. We represent 53 hospitals in South Dakota and 33 post-acute. That would be consisting of home health, hospice, and long-term care. And I just wanted to say that SDAHO members have reviewed this bill and last week are supportive of this, and so we ask your support for the bill as well. In addition, as a cancer survivor, a recent one, I have a story, too, about genetic counseling. I was diagnosed in August of 2013 with stomach cancer, and through that process, I became to understand that it was a very deadly form of cancer. And so it was a long fight for myself, but in my recovery, I also was concerned about my children. This is a very deadly cancer internationally. It's not as common in the United States, which is great, but I was concerned about my children. So the oncologist referred me to a genetic counselor, and we visited at length. We looked at all of my family history, and I was determined through the conversation and the science of genetic counseling that there really wasn't a whole lot of science out there for this type of cancer. In other words, even if I had genetic counseling, it was like a single digits kind of percentage of being able to be correctly determine whether or not I had a specific gene and whether or not it would even be relevant to my kids to test, because the science just wasn't there. We ultimately made the decision, my husband and I, about not moving forward with that. But I will say I really appreciated having that long conversation with the genetic counselor, understanding the scope of stomach cancer, and I don't have their terms of art, but how they know and how they can indicate whether you could be a possible recipient for my children. And ultimately, we determined that it wasn't going to be a helpful testing for us at this point in time. Maybe in the future, the science will be more exact in that art. But anyway, I just wanted to share my personal story about how that worked. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman,
good morning.
Members of the committee. My name is Tim Doherty. I'm a registered lobbyist for Avera Health. On behalf of Avera, I want to thank Representative Munsterman for sponsoring this legislation. We strongly support the legislation. Avera has two genetic counselors on our staff who work closely with physicians in providing genetic counseling. The work that they do, I think, was well described by Deborah Owens. Our counselors meet with our patients and provide information. They don't encourage our patients to engage in genetic testing. They just provide information and help our patients make the right decision. So we have one of our genetic counselors here who would be available to answer any technical questions that you may have. Her name's Kaylee Swift, and she works in one of our facilities. So with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to testify and urge the committee members to support this legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. Any further proponents for House Bill 1069?
Good morning, representatives. My name is Dr. Paul Amundson. I serve as Chief Medical Officer for Dakota Care Health Plan. I've been in my role almost 9 years. For at least that long a time, I've been following the issue of genetic testing, which is extremely important. I think you've all heard of the terminology of personalized medicine, especially in the area of oncology. And there's no doubt that genetic testing oversees just oncology. We're talking about non-invasive prenatal testing, personalized medicine to customize oncology care. A lot of different opportunities out there, but that is not without danger for your constituents and for our members as well. Let me walk you through one type of case to help you understand why I speak in testimony in support of this. Let's say a Dakota Care member goes to their family doctor. I'm a family physician, so I'll pick on my own specialty. Goes to a family doctor, had maybe heard on TV about a somebody who was promoting a type of genetic test. They hear about it and they say, "Wow, my aunt Mabel had breast cancer. I should probably go get this." Goes to their family doc. Family doc says, "Great, you know, knock yourself out. Go get this test." They get the blood drawn. The blood is sent to a national lab. Unbeknownst to the family physician, the insurance company is billed approximately $5,000. That's about an average test for most of these types of genetic tests. Now, understand there's definitely different levels. There's some low-level, very inexpensive genomic-based tests that have been out there for years. There are also some very expensive new ones. It's not uncommon for us to see a bill for $5,000 to $40,000 for tests that have limited clinical applicability. So in a case, in the scenario that I provided you, the physician did not check with the payer to see what kind of criteria they should follow to make sure it's medically necessary. The claim is then denied, and the patient is billed the entire $5,000, and you can imagine the scenario and tension that creates between physicians and patients. We have relied on our genetic counselors for several years. I believe there's 11 in the state, 9 associated with Sanford, 2 associated with Avera right now. As of January 1, Dakota Care was the first health plan to require genetic testing before we will consider payment for a BRCA blood test. BRCA is probably the most common genetic test that we see. This is the breast cancer one that you've heard about with Angelina Jolie advocating for, specifically for women who have a personal or strong family history of ovarian or breast cancer. We credential our genetic counselors. Mr. Stein could certainly comment on the educational requirements for genetic counselors. There are a few physicians who have medical genetic advanced degrees as well that we would allow as well under this. But basically, I have no problem. Dakota Care has no problem with putting genetic counselors to the level of a physician or other mid-level practitioner. To allow them to order genetic tests. They still have to follow medical coverage to assure that these tests are evidence-based and follow those types of nationally recognized coverage criteria. Hopefully, with this, it will reduce the potential for people to get stuck with high bills for labs that shouldn't have ever been ordered in the first place. So, I speak in a strong proponent of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Amundson. Any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Lauren Pankratz, registered lobbyist for Sanford Health. We were a part of bringing the Licensure Act for genetic counselors forward in 2009, and a major part of that reason was that we, one, wanted to make sure they were properly credentialed, and we had the first genetic counselors in South Dakota at our facility. I think it's important to understand, and I appreciate Dr. Amundson's comments, that almost exclusively for the practicing genetic counselor, they are hospital-based. In South Dakota, they're hospital-based and employed by the hospital. So, in terms of the insurance piece, they're paid to do what they do. And I think it's also important to remember that the House Bill 1069 doesn't change or have any impact on the existing referral process. They have to have that referral by that licensed provider, physician, PA, nurse practitioner, and then the reporting requirements are still in place, that they have to go back and share that information with the referring provider. So, and so based on the testimony that you've heard, and I think especially from the personal anecdotal comments, but Dr. Amundson as well, by a critical component of the legislation is allowing the general or the genetic counselor to be able to order those tests. The background that they have in that decision-making process. So it's a critical piece of this legislation, and it's a major part of the reason that we're asking you to consider it favorably. So we would ask you to do that. And in terms of questions, you have experts in the room, so I would sincerely hope that you would direct those to those folks if you do have them. And so thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Pankratz. Any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Bell. I'm an attorney from Pierre, and I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota State Medical Association. Based off of the testimony that you've heard, we would just ask for your support of this legislation. Similar to the previous speaker, if you have any questions, probably best addressed to the experts in the room. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Any further proponents? Any further proponents of House Bill 1069? Seeing none, we'll move to opponents. Are there any opponents? Again, I'll ask, are there any opponents to House Bill 1069? Seeing none, we will move into committee discussion and or action. And you have a question?
Could we go through the question part
committee
first
questions.
Before
sure.
we move into discussion
yes.
and action?
Thank you. Committee questions.
I have one. Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Deutsch.
For Mr. Pankratz.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Pankratz, does this bill in any way restrict any willing provider, licensed genetic counselor from participating in a network in South Dakota? So any genetic counselor, does Sanford interpret this bill as in any way limiting their ability to participate?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Deutsch. If I understand your question correctly, and it might be a question of Dr. Amundson as well because of his position with the Dakota Care Health Plan, but genetic counselors in this act or through insurance are not able to bill directly. So I think that that's the answer to your question. They're not a freestanding provider from that perspective. The tests are sometimes may be covered by insurance, but as a provider, they're not able to bill directly, and this doesn't change that in any way.
Thank you.
Any other committee questions? Representative Greenfield.
I have a question, Mr. Pankratz. Thank you. The small town doctors then that think that the genetic testing is necessary, do they have to go through the genetic counselors like Sanford or Avera in order to have the test conducted, or can they do that themselves? Can they just order it themselves? I guess, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Pankratz.
Representative Greenfield, again, I think that that's part of the reason that we're bringing this legislation forward, and I think that that's part of what you heard from Dr. Amundson, is that they, in most cases, may not be the expert in determining what might be the appropriate test. Now, could they order that test? As a licensed practitioner of the healing arts, they would be able to make that decision and make that recommendation with or without a genetic counselor. But I think the field is growing in that the healthcare provider that is making that referral to the genetic counselor, they're doing it because that is a very narrow and focused field, and they're the ones with the expertise to help make that decision.
Thank you.
Follow up? Thank you. Any further committee questions?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Deutsch.
I'll pose this to anybody who might have knowledge of this. If we pass this bill, can you tell me, will this save money for the consumer?
Any likely? Yes. Dr. Amundson, approach the chair. Proceed.
Dr. Paul Amundson, Chief Medical Officer, Dakota Care. If I understand your question, Representative, your intent is how this will affect individuals, let's say, whether they have commercial insurance or not. My short answer would be yes. No matter who would order the test, whether it's a genetic counselor, if this bill would pass through, a physician, other types of providers that are allowed within this legislation, they would still have to, for the vast majority of health plans out there, have to meet medical necessity criteria. The hope here, for me at least, is that, you know, you're going to have, in the example that I provided, less unnecessary tests ordered where people don't find out after the fact that, boy, I didn't know that this was going to cost me several thousand dollars. If I would have known that and been fully informed beforehand, I probably would have made it a different decision or made sure my physician's office or ordering provider's office, you know, jumped through all the hoops to make sure it was going to get approved before they just went and ordered the test. So in that respect, I think it's going to save money for unnecessary. We'll continue to spend money. And fortunately, the cost of genetic tests is slowly going down over time, primarily with competition and advanced technology. Excuse me. But, you know, there will be more and more genetic tests. So I expect if you're going to look at the entire broad picture of genetic test spend, it's going to go up over time. But I think we'll be able to target them better. We'll be using more of a rifle approach rather than a shotgun approach with these ordering of these tests.
Thank you. May I have a follow-up? Thank you. We've heard testimony today about how important testing can be for cancer. Can you help me understand how the testing is currently used in South Dakota in the abortion industry?
No, I really can't. That isn't an area that I've come across in my role. You know, we're starting to see more ordering by physicians, primarily physicians practicing obstetrics, looking at not what we call non-invasive prenatal testing to be able to look at the genetics of the infant to look for chromosomal abnormalities without having to do more invasive tests like amniocentesis, where a needle is stuck in through the abdomen of the pregnant mom to pull out some of the fluid around the baby, you know, which has a 5% risk or so of causing a miscarriage. So if you can do something less invasive and still get that same type of information, not so much in my opinion for, you know, looking at abortion, but being able to educate these parents. Typically, these tests are done at for advanced maternal age moms who are 35 or older to make, because they have a higher chance of having some type of chromosomal abnormality of the infant just because of maternal age, to help educate them and do pregnancy planning to look for abnormalities early on so that you can hopefully intervene as a physician before some complication would arise. That's the best answer I can give.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Representative Haugart.
Yeah, that's primarily my concern. I'm fascinated by the genetic testing and how focused it can be. And I understand that the difference in cost is dramatic if you're going to look at a broad spectrum as opposed to being fine-tuned. It can be reasonably priced. So I think that is great. I hope it advances dramatically, especially in the cancer research and those kinds of areas. My concern is akin to Representative Deutsch's concern. I can see where Planned Parenthood would hire a genetic counselor and they would just routinely do testing looking for autism or Downs or even any kind of perceived learning disorders, that sort of thing, and misuse it. And so that's why I'm concerned that it appears to give more authority to the genetic counselor to go ahead and order these things on their own without having much interaction with the referring physician. So I'm wondering, is that a possibility, or is it? I'm assuming it's expected that there will be a good communication between the doctor and the genetic counselor, but do you see where I'm concerned about the abuse possibility if a genetic counselor is allowed on their own to proceed with these tests?
I understand the theoretical possibility in that scenario. I think practically right now with where genetic tests is for prenatal, the physicians who are ordering that are primarily concerned about assuring that these are normal pregnancies for these moms who are typically of advanced maternal age. Now, right now, a physician could order a test like that now. In your scenario, if a physician was employed by, let's say, Planned Parenthood, that scenario could still happen. In my world, they're still going to have to follow medical necessity guidelines. And in the vast majority of those type of cases, the evidence is not there that type of test result will impact treatment of that individual. Now, it's hard to know how to predict what the future of genetic testing is going to show. I mean, most of the things you could probably pick up anyway right now under a good 3D ultrasound anyway. So I think that argument is weakened by some of the other technologies that are already out there. You know, I personally am not concerned about that aspect of genetic counseling being abused by non-physicians in the obstetrical world. I mean, sure. I just don't see that.
Follow-up question for Mr. Quinn?
Yes. Mr. Stein.
Thank you.
Mr. Quinn, along that same line, I am concerned about that possibility, and I don't trust a Planned Parenthood that would sell body parts and abuse the profession the way they've abused it. So I don't have concern about a Sanford or an Avera doing appropriate testing. But I do have concern about a rogue Planned Parenthood type of organization that would pursue those possibilities. And as we know, autism has become a widely observed medical condition. Is that part of your experience as far as your training to be able to find those genetic abnormalities that might identify autism?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Stein.
So a few parts to that. So first off, it's a sensitive issue to me too. I have a brother with Down syndrome. I've worked in the prenatal world, and most studies will show that when, and physicians will admit this too, when you get information from the physician, it's a couple minute conversation, it's to the point and the negatives. When you meet with a genetic counselor, that half-hour conversation includes more realistic and positive. And I can tell you of the patients that I meet with, when patients are getting prenatal diagnosis done, they're doing it for reassurance. And if that's not it, it's for pregnancy planning. So if it's Down syndrome, number one risk is for a heart defect, and so we need to do an echocardiogram, and the patient perhaps might need to deliver at a place with a NICU instead. So right now, the genetic test counselor does walk through the testing options and also points out the accuracy. So there's several different types of screening. There's several different types of testing. There's probably five different types total, and making sure patient understands which is which and what's not accurate. And so, speaking on behalf of my profession,
I'm not concerned in the same way you are, but I do understand your question. With regard to autism, we, the collective, have probably thought we could, by this point in time for autism, we would know the genetic cause for most cases. 85% of the time, we still don't know what causes autism. Many times of that 15%, which has, grown, we know sometimes it's a chromosome microdeletion, sometimes it's a single gene change. There's no way to universally test for everything at once. The only way to do a test is to kind of know exactly what you're looking for, and autism isn't something that can be done like that right now.
Follow up on that question.
Go ahead. Follow up.
Along that line, though, have you seen an advance in genetic testing as far as being able to identify some aspects of autism?
Mr. Chair? Yes, in the pediatric world. So really, in the pediatric world, what we have is families who have been on a diagnostic odyssey for so many years. They know their child has autism, but it feels like they want more. And so there's been a family in the pediatric world that I helped for kind of a year and a half. And finally, a test became available that we thought could help them. And we were able to pinpoint the exact diagnosis for her. What that brought her was a new community. She's traveled to other parts of the United States, developed a social network, is really kind of at the forefront and a parental advocate for this specific condition. So yes, testing for autism has it advanced, but it's in the pediatric world, ending diagnostic odysseys for some families.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Representative Constant. Oh, I'm sorry.
He answered my question.
Oh, okay. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah, Representative DeSanto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question probably, I would say, for Dr. Amundson. As a practicing physician, it's really important to me that the consumer, the patient, really has control over their own health care, their own health care decisions. And so I just am wondering, does this legislation in any way affect or take away the power of the consumer to know that this genetic test is being ordered? Or would this, in essence, make it so that it could be ordered without their knowledge or without their consent?
It would not change anything in the current structure of ordering lab tests. In the current environment, with the way it is, with physicians being the primary orders, that potential could still theoretically happen. Many of us have gone to the doctor and we've gotten a blood panel, and very few of us really look and say, wow, did you have to do all 20 tests when maybe you only needed 5 of those, but it was the same cost? The example is such to prove that that can still happen. I don't think this is going to weaken that. I think it actually will strengthen it, because my intent is that patients get more education, more time with a genetic counselor than what maybe a physician could offer in educating that person about the need and the nuances of the genetic test. Whereas, and Mr. Stein, I think, testified already to that fact, that they spend at least a half an hour with these people, you know, making sure they fully understand the statistics and the pluses and minuses of all these tests. So I would testify personally to say that this should strengthen that ability and empower the member or the patient further.
Okay, are there any further committee questions? If not, we will close public testimony and we'll open it up for committee committee discussion.
I have an amendment, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Representative Greenfield?
Thank you. Can I speak to the amendment?
Technically, we're not in the action portion, okay. But I guess I would defer to the sponsor.
Pardon? Yeah, she can go ahead.
Okay.
You'd make your motion first for the amendment.
I move that we go ahead and pass 1069RA.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. There is a motion to amend, and it's been distributed?
Yes. Yes, sir, Mr. Chair.
The amendment is 1069RA, and there's been a second. Is there any discussion? Representative Greenfield.
I am bringing forth this amendment because I feel very strongly about changing the words from ordering to just discussing. So you will see that on page 3, line 11, it would revert back to discussing rather than ordering. On page 3, lines 22 to 24 would be taken out because there was a change made there. On page 4, we would delete lines 1 to 9 inclusive, getting rid of the change of ordering again. And on page 5, we would delete lines 2 through 13 inclusive, getting rid of the amended form. Again, ordering. I don't like this bill. I don't like the changes that are made in it. I worked halfway into the night looking for some of the information on the genetic testing, and I came up with the question, why would the doctor be so busy that he'd have to have the genetic counselor order the testing? I found that the NBC News back in 2014 reported that the genetic testing results that came forth from prenatal testing was 50% inaccurate. 50% of the time it was wrong. There was a New England Center of Investigative and Reporting that came up with that. The Life News, March 2015, reported that many of the prenatal tests are being oversold. They're just, you know, they're just requiring the testing. And then the counseling follow-up creates a fear factor in people. You know, what do I do? Now there's going to be something wrong with my baby. And so there's a lot of unnecessary abortions that take place. And some of the times it's the healthy fetus that's aborted. So that's why I'm bringing forth the changes. It's not that I do not feel that genetic testing is important, but I don't think that it's up to the necessarily the genetic counsel to do the ordering. I just soon keep it with the doctor, and I don't want this to be a bill that promotes fear factor, that the counselor and the following up would be able to say, well, this is wrong, therefore, you know, we'll end up with the perfect society, the perfect people, healthcare will go down because, or the health costs will go down because we've set up the perfect society and we become the survival of the fittest here. And for that reason, I just think that everything should stay intact here. I would go along with, of course, the change of broadening the American Board of Medical and Genetics and Genomics that was mentioned on page 1. That was the thing that was left. With that, I thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greenfield. Representative Munsterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the amendment pretty much guts out the whole bill for the most part. And I guess in my opinion, that's quite a stretch on how this would be used. What we're talking about here is actually allowing somebody who has very specialized knowledge and expertise to carry out exactly what they do. And it provides efficiency, savings for the consumer, definitely provides for a lot more knowledge to be transferred to the consumer in understanding. I mean, we went through it. You heard another personal testimony as well. I mean, we know in society there's good things that can be used for bad, and I get that. But what we're doing here, and let's get back down to what we're actually doing here, we're allowing people who are highly trained to actually take a couple steps out of the system under still the supervision and direction and referral of a physician, all right? But they are able to make that decision and order that test based on that consultation with the patient and their family for what's best for them. And so I would ask that you resist the amendment and move on to pass the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Representative Deutsch.
Just a question. I want to make sure that the amendment solely removes the proposed changes and does not eliminate any of the verbiage that is currently in law. Could you please clarify that?
Representative Greenfield?
To my knowledge, it does not change what's already here. It only changes the add-ons. Thank you for the question.
Follow-up? Any further? Yes.
I guess I'd have to... I'd have to challenge that. You're getting rid of a lot of verbiage that's currently in the statute. You're talking about, yeah, 1 through 9 on page 4, on page 5, 2 through 13. You're taking out quite a bit of statute. You are gutting this bill.
Thank you. Representative Haugard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, it's my understanding that by deleting that, that's deleting this proposed portion of the bill, so then it leaves the statute as it presently exists. It doesn't delete this existing statute. It leaves it as it exists. If it was going to delete it, it would specifically identify it as deleting the statute, I think.
It says it right there, delete lines 1 through 9.
Right.
On the amendment, it says delete.
Right.
Lines 1 through 9, which means you're deleting lines 1 through 9.
No, it means you're deleting that from this proposed bill. So it leaves the statute as it exists. I think LRC drafted with the idea that you delete out those sections because what she was trying to accomplish was to exclude those underlying portions that exist in the bill. So by doing that, you're just changing it back to the existing law.
Any questions? Further questions? Discussion? Representative Campbell.
I realize we've passed the testimony phase, but we do have an expert in the room, a genetic counselor, and I'm wondering if we have the option of asking him to perhaps rephrase some of his testimony in regards to the specific amendment.
The chair has the prerogative to suspend the rules in the interest of seeking the truth, and since an amendment was distributed before the discussion to start it, I will allow that. So we'll ask Mr. Stein, is that your correct?
Yes, that is.
Okay, would you care to answer that question? You don't have to if you don't want.
I'd be happy
okay.
to.
Okay, thank you.
Sure I understand it.
I'm not sure I understand the question. However, Section 3 and Section 5 essentially have been eliminated by the amendment. And I wouldn't call myself a genetic counselor by any stretch of the imagination. Your opinion, I suppose, is what I'm asking in regards to Representative Greenfield's amending the bill and her thoughts relative to your thoughts on the issue.
Mr. Chair? Yeah, thank you. So sometimes when something seems so incorrect, it's hard to kind of know where to start with debating it. And so please have me keep explaining it till I do a good job. But with regard to having when a physician asks us, they are asking us to assist them, to help them. It's not necessarily because they're so busy, though it is time consuming, but they look at us, thankfully, we very much appreciate our relationships with physicians, as their assistant who knows more about genetics than they do, and they don't want to make a mistake. You know, they look at us as partners. We certainly do not increase the amount of genetic testing that takes place. It is not a seek out everything we can find. Really, what we're doing is we're saying that physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs,
already have the ability to order genetic testing. We're saying we know as much or more about genetic testing and its accuracy than in many cases than they do. And so in order to help with efficiency and reduce the chance for error, this has genetic counselors as having the ability to work with the physician to be able to order the test and interpret it back to them. So now why don't you help me make sure that I'm actually answering your question.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I guess perhaps what might help me is to know how much is involved in genetic testing from a numbers standpoint, because you're being able to fine-tune, and I don't have a genetic map in front of me. It sounds to me like the testing could be almost infinite in its scope if you don't focus.
So if a patient comes to me and says, I want genetic testing, I would have to say, for what? And they'd say, well, I just want genetic testing. There's no test, you know, I can do. We sit down and we talk about a family history, you know, and do you have a family history of early onset colon cancer or hemochromatosis or other rare conditions? No. Well, then there's no testing I can do for you. So genetic testing, you still have to have an indication or a reason to order a test. There's no kind of be-all, end-all test. We have seen in the pharmacogenetic world, sometimes older patients especially have had a pharmacogenetic test ordered for them by their physician without any medical necessity and not really understanding the results that came back as a way of ordering some genetic testing. But genetic testing is not so wide open that you can just get tested for anything and everything. There still has to be a medical indication or reason that a test is done. And even if that's so, a physician has to refer to a genetic counselor for the counseling. Genetic counseling does not equal genetic testing. But then a report has to go back to the physician along with any test results.
Thank you. In the interest of time, I did consult with our LRC staff and to address the question to our committee of what it substantially changes or the amendment does. I would agree, and again, not taking sides, but I would agree that the indications of removing statute, if you look, the underlying portion is really the only thing that is being added. If you remove those lines, you're going to remove part of the statute. So Representative Consett, comment is correct based on our LRC stat. No? Sure. Yep. Go ahead.
If those sections were to be repealed, they would be listed in their entirety and with lines drawn through them. Deleting them just takes them out of the bill, so they remain as they are today in code.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, if they were going to be repealed, all the wording would be overstricken.
If the amendment,
okay, then
yes.
I do have a question, and this would be for
Representative Consett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the representative bringing the amendment. Explain to me on page 2 where you've got 6 crossed out and 7 underlined. What?
Not page 2. It's page. Got to be page 3 is the first start.
Mr. Chair, I didn't do that.
Representative Greenfield.
I didn't do those. It was on page 3? Okay.
That's just changing that section. Well.
Yep. Okay. Is there any further discussion? Representative Soley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the amendment?
Yes.
I just would like to speak strongly against it. I think we've heard very convincing and helpful testimony that this will improve health care. I think we've also heard that this has very little to do
with the kinds of concerns represented about the prenatal testing. I think that was laid out for us well. I think this would be an excellent change, the kind of keeping up with what's happening in the medical field, and I think we should defeat the amendment and go forward with the bill as written.
Okay. Representative Haugard, shortly.
Yes. I'm just supportive of the amendment because it puts it back to the status quo and removes the opportunity for the genetic counselor to do the ordering. There's no reason why they can't text, email, get a quick response from the doctor. The genetic testing is focused, and if the genetic counselor knows what they want to get to, they can quickly text that, get a confirmation from the doctor, and just do that.
Representative Greenfield.
I think that we should go ahead, and I'm still, you know, going to support my own amendment, of course, because I believe in it. I think that we could go down a very bad road here with the prenatal testing, and I don't want to see that happen. Maybe it would start out as a good thing, but end up to be a very, very bad thing. So please support my amendment.
Thank you. The motion before you is to amend House Bill 1069, as amended, 1069-RA. This will be a voice vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, same nay.
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 Amendment fails.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Munsterman. Representative Munsterman.
I would move to pass in 1069.
Is there a second?
Second.
There has been a motion to pass by Representative Munsterman and second by Representative Soley. Is there any discussion?
Nope. I will hold on that in the essence of time. I think we've talked a lot. Thank you for your discussion in this bill. Really appreciate it.
Any further discussion? If not, we will proceed to vote. The motion before you is to move that House Bill 1069 do pass. The Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Campbell.
Aye.
Consett.
Aye.
Deutsch.
Aye.
DeSanto.
Aye.
Greenfield.
No.
Haugard.
No.
Holmes.
Aye.
McCleary.
Aye.
Sly.
Aye.
Soley.
Aye.
Woman.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
Okay.
11 ayes, 2 nays.
The motion do pass, receiving a majority vote, hereby passes onto the floor. We have to sign that, right?
Oh, it's my bill.
So. Okay.
Yeah, so just
yes. Okay, so I need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Representative Deutsch, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, so second by Woolman. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned.
Mm-hmm.